If you think about it, then you dream about it. Don't worry about it, gon' talk about it. If you think about it, then you dream about it. Don't worry about it, gon' talk about it. If you think about it, then you dream about it. Don't worry about it, we gon' talk about it. If you think about it, then you dream about it. Don't worry about it, we gon' talk about it.
Hey, you guys, thank you for tuning in for another episode of Sorry Not Sorry Podcast. I want to thank everyone who's been listening so far, who's been showing love, who's been sharing, retweeting, hitting me up for feedback, the whole nine. So today's episode is going to be super duper fun. I have a roundtable of some great individuals here to talk about HBCUs versus PWIs. The idea is not to pin the two schools against each other, but just to talk about how a person of color's college experience can differ between the two institutions. So if you just go around the table, say your name, your occupation, the school you went to, graduating year, and your major. I know that's a lot. So if we can start this way.
Okay. I'll start first. Trey Phelps.
Occupation.
I'm a manager for Verizon Consumer Division. I graduated from Clark Atlanta University 2013. My major was psych at the time. And
that's it.
There we go.
What's up, y'all? You want the government, right?
I mean, you can.
My man said the government.
You can say that. Whatever people gonna recognize you by.
I'm gonna just stick with Say. My name is Say. Occupation: I'm a youth leader for University Settlement nonprofit. The first HBCU, Lincoln University. That's why I attended. Yeah, a lot of people don't give us the respect we deserve, but. That's neither here or there. I was a mass communications major.
Yeah, you graduated?
Oh, yeah, 2016.
Carlisle. I'm an admissions counselor for SUNY Downstate Health Sciences University. I work for the College of Medicine. Also, I went to Marist College, graduated 2014. Currently in Stony Brook University, getting my master's in higher education administration.
Hi, everybody. My name is Crystalyn. I went to Howard University as well as CUNY Medgar Evers College, so I did PBI as well as HBCU. I am class of 08 at Howard, but I ended up finishing in 2010 at Medgar. I am an educator. I recently just went back into teaching after being a dean for the last 3 years.
Yes. What was your major?
I was a business major. I did marketing and advertising.
Okay.
Well, I'm good on that. Hey, what's up? My name Damo. I sound good on there?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, my name Damo. I went to Marist College. My major was psychology, and I'm a hustler.
What year did you graduate?
2015.
All right.
My name's Habika. I'm a product manager for international licensees of Nautica brand. I went to Howard University.
Hey,
graduated 2009, although I was class of 08. And my major was accounting.
All right. And I guess I have to introduce myself, my listeners. You guys know me, Gigi. I went to Clark Atlanta for a year. Then I transferred to Marist College where I graduated in 2015. I walked in 2015. I didn't get my degree till 2016. Occupation, currently I'm unemployed because I quit my job because they had me fucked up. But I am the CEO of my own media company and I'm a podcaster. So that matters. So I definitely want to thank you guys all for coming. It's a lot of people here. So the first thing I do want to talk about is why did you choose the school you went to, whether it was HBCU or PWI? Not sure who wants to go first for answering that. Anyone? Go ahead, Carlisle.
I mean, so I remember actually having a conversation. My mom, she told me that, hey, I ain't got no money for you to go to school. And I was like, well, mom, I want to go to college. Like, you know, this is actually something I want to do. So when it came down to it, I applied to 25 schools. And I was like, all right, this is what I'm going to do. Didn't pay for no application fees or no secondaries. I got everything waived. So I was, like, finding programs and stuff. I was also in Sponsors for Educational Opportunities, which was in high school. So I started getting my wheels going. And then I had went to Marist my sophomore year. And I took a civil rights class, actually, that was hosted by Vassar. So I got to campus. I thought it was cool, but my dream was actually to go to Howard.
Oh, look at that look.
I know, right? My dream was to go to Howard, but once I started going to Howard and, I mean, visiting Howard, and then once I started, you know, visiting other schools and applying and getting my letters back, it was something where I knew that Marist had a better opportunity, I could say, as far as in the program that they offered me, which was HEOP. So I got in through that, which is the Higher Education Opportunity Program, if you don't know. So I just felt that they had a little better support when it came down to me actually interviewing, showing me what the campus is, and trying to get me adapted to something that was different. So that's why I kind of chose to go to Marist.
Okay. Anyone else? Let me hear from the Howard people, because...
Well, my story is not like the token Howard story. Like, everybody else is like, oh, yeah, I watched A Different World. I saw Bill Cosby. I saw it on the Cosby Show sweatshirt. That was not me. I was the total opposite. So I actually was born and raised in Brooklyn, and I ended up leaving to go to move to Pennsylvania around like middle school, high school. And when I got there, I was like in predominantly white spaces. And so a lot of the predominantly white spaces like didn't make me feel welcome. So I always somehow found my way to go to like something in the inner city. So I would end up being like in a dance program or end up doing like my mentorship programs. Like anything was always around black people, even though I was primarily around white people. Even so much like my last year of high school, I was the only black girl in my graduating class. Mm. And so when I entered into this dance program, the person who was like the head dance instructor, she went to Howard. And when I tell you like most beautiful, like ostentatious, just outgoing personality, and everything I saw in her was like, she was just a boss. And I was just like, yo, I want to be like that. And it was crazy because at that time I was having like a lot of conflict with my mom. And so this woman I kind of looked to as like an older sister, like an auntie type of thing. And so my mom wanted me to apply to every school in Pennsylvania. So I applied to like mad schools in Pennsylvania, applied to a school in Spain because I wanted to get away from my mom's, did it behind her back. And then like I applied to Howard, and then this like HI, I think it was Hampton. Mm-hmm. I applied there. You caught that? Yeah. So I applied there. Oh, it's an institute. Hampton is an institute. So, you know, there's Howard University and then Hampton Institute. Yeah.
It was a shady moment. my engineer actually went to Hampton, so you got to keep it cute. Ooh.
And you know it's an institute, yes?
Okay. All right, yeah.
So I made the, you know, I don't want to say better, but I will say better decision to go to Howard instead. And so ended up going there, and it was a beautiful decision for me. Like I had like the experience that I felt like I was craving, like when I was around these like very white spaces. And funny enough, I turned out that one of my family members had actually also gone to Howard. And I found that out when I got onto Howard's campus, and like the community that was there, like, let me know about this person. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like a coming home type of experience for me after being in these white spaces.
Okay, that's cool. Anybody else?
You said the other Howard person, right? Okay. So I do have the token HBCU story. I'm half American, half African. My father is like the first, he was the first one to come over from his family. And he went to Baruch. And he came with no money for college. He has like 11 brothers and sisters. So the brother before him got the last amount of money to go to college. So in order for him to go to college, he had to come here. He came with no money, went to Baruch, whatever. That was all he knew. He also knew that Kwame Nkrumah went to Lincoln University. So that was as far as his like vast array of like HBCUs went. He just knew Lincoln. My mother's side of the family is American, and you know, they're the token black Americans. No one really went to college on that side, so I didn't really have much to go off of. So our family, like, we got together, we watched stuff like, our favorite movie is still School Days. Like, we crack jokes, yes, about it during Thanksgiving. Like, my cousin still wants to be called Big Brother Dean Almighty. He's 40 years old. Why is that still a thing? And I like religiously watched A Different World. I watched all types of like shows and movies, and they always mentioned some type of HBCU. That's all I ever knew. Howard is always the one that is always mentioned. That's the one I knew from the beginning. I will say that as I got older, I studied a lot of different HBCUs. I knew about the Institute and Spelman as well. So like as I got older, I decided that I was going to go to an HBCU. And it's funny, I applied for 4 colleges. I applied for Brooklyn College just to make my mother happy because she wanted me to stay home. I'm an only child. And the rest were all HBCUs. It was Spelman, Howard, and Hampton. And
damn, no Clark?
No Clark. No Clark. My father said no to Clark. Sorry. So I literally wanted to apply to Spelman early. I applied to Spelman early. I went to Spelman's campus for like their weekend, went to the AUC, loved the AUC, was ready to go to Spelman. I was excited. Howard is kind of late, you know, HBCUs are late. I got the scholarship letter before I got the acceptance letter, and it was a wrap. I was going to Howard, full scholarship. Didn't only had to pay for books and room and board. That was it. I knew that I was supposed to go there. Like, I knew it was meant to be. I got that letter first. Went back and looked at, like, was cleaning out, like, getting ready, packing for college, and looked at my junior high school book. And the front of the autograph books, asked you what college you want to go to. And I wrote Howard University. So it was like, it was like always kismet. It was always meant to be. That's where I was supposed to be. It was definitely home. It will always be home. That's where my heart is.
That's lit.
I guess I'll share my story. I knew I wanted to go to college, period. But I wanted to go to a black college because of the same thing. I watched A Different World, School Days. And for me, I applied to Howard and I got in, but I didn't go. I applied to Clark Atlanta, which was weird because Clark Atlanta recruiter came from Atlanta to come to my school to speak to me and some other students because we were the top of our class. And I knew I just wanted to go down south, period. So that's why Howard was like, I don't want to be in D.C. I want to be in the south. And being in Atlanta, you know, that's party town, chocolate city. I'm like, you know, I'm a date. I had a whole idea what my life was going to be like in college. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Clark Atlanta. I applied to a lot of PWIs. There's a school called Allegheny College. They gave me a scholarship for like $20,000. Which was the most I got from any school I applied to. Every school gave me some type of money, but they gave me the most. And to this day, I always say, maybe I should have went to Allegheny. I wouldn't have had the financial aid troubles I've had. But I was like, you know, I want to go to the black college. I want to be with my people. And for me, and you guys can probably comment on this, I don't think diversity was an issue with me because I grew up in Brooklyn. So I wasn't really around a lot of white people. So I didn't really think I needed to be around diversity. And when I speak to people about HBCUs and PWIs, a lot of people shun HBCUs because they say things like, I have all my life to be around black people. I want to experience diversity. So does anyone want to comment on that? Like, do you get diversity at HBCUs?
Absolutely. I would think so. Just from Clark Atlanta, like itself. Like, Atlanta itself is a melting pot. But before I add on that, I'll let you go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So, I mean, I went to the Clark Atlanta University institution, so all that good stuff. But my reason for choosing Clark Atlanta, I actually was accepted to FSU, Florida State University, because I'm originally from Tampa, Florida. I ended up choosing Clark Atlanta because after college visits, going to FSU, I didn't really feel as comfortable. They made me want to go. I had to go to summer classes. I'll be honest, my SAT scores wasn't where it needed to be. So they said you need to take summer school before you get there. But Clark was like, look, your score is fine. Like, you can take a summer off. You can just come up there later. I mean, just to be honest, getting there and just seeing people that look like me. Like, I'll just be completely honest. I got family there, friends that was in Atlanta. So I'm like, why not go there where I'm comfortable? And just have a good time. Like, the orientation guys, like, they show love.
Orientation's lit there.
Lit. Like, it's almost like a party, to be honest. Like, literally. That's how they get their student enrollment up. Like,
First
just let me party with
when
them.
When you get there and you go, like, to the auditorium with all the freshmen, they have the orientation people, like, all the, I guess they're all upperclassmen, mm-hmm. with the Clark Atlanta shirts, strolling down, partying. I'm standing with my mother like, bitch,
I gotta
I'm
get
about
here.
To be lit here.
Nah, seriously. And then on top of that, they gave me, I had like two scholarships from Clark for my freshman year being an HP honors program. So it was a great experience thus far to start my matriculation, I would say. And it just felt home more than anything. I think everyone had their opinions about why they went there, what have you. But just in general, it just felt natural. Like, mm-hmm. just to be honest, like, it's no long drawn out story. And that's what happened. And it was the best choice of my life.
I want to hear from you, Damo, because you went to Marist, and me and you are from Brooklyn,
yeah.
and we're both from the hood. So what was it like being at Marist College?
I had wanted to speak on why I went to Marist. It's real quick. I have no thoughts of going to college at all, and I got a college advisor on my senior year. They just hired her, and she was heavily involved. Like, she made me do She made me do college essays and applications and all that as classwork, like, for a grade. So that's the only reason why I did it. And when I got acceptance letter, I was like, oh, this shit real. Like, I thought it was just for the grade. And she told me Marist was a great fit for me. I don't know why she said that. Like, I went there the first day for orientation, and I was the only black person there except for, like, you know, a couple Africans or, like, some black people from Europe and whatnot. And I was just like, nah, this ain't for me. I'm ready to go. And, but, you know, I ended up sticking around and whatnot. And being there,
What you want me to say? What was the question?
Well, let me just say this though. So when I came to Clark Atlanta, this was like the hustler on campus. This he was the mascot. He had connections to get free swipes into the cafeteria. Like he had the mail room. If you don't got your ID for your package, he gonna get your package for you. He had the connections on campus. He was like the Marist College hustle man. Like he had everything. And because it was but so many black people on campus, this man was such a fucking liar. He would send these mass text messages to all the black people on campus. Oh, house party, twerk team in the building. This rapper gonna be there. Like he would gas it to everyone pull up to the party, to want some open bars, drinks everywhere. You get there, ain't no liquor. There's music and people in a damn house party.
It was lit though.
And it's always
it was
my house.
It was lit though.
And it was always your house.
You gotta get them there.
It was lit though, right? Foy was lit.
But it was lit. But speaking of social life, I definitely want to talk about the difference in social life with HBCUs and PWIs. I know with me at Marist, I think the only difference in social life was I couldn't be completely myself because all my roommates were white. So I couldn't do a lot of things. I didn't feel comfortable saying a lot of things. But for the simple fact that I just feel like I always was the face of my race. And they would ask me questions, and it's kind of like, why are you asking me? I remember in my sociology class, the professor was speaking about the black experience, and he keep looking at me to, like, back away saying, like, right, right? I'm like...
nah, bro.
Yeah, so I definitely want to speak about the social life on campus and whether you feel like your school played a big part in how you function on campus. Say.
Pick up on that one?
Yeah. And you're Greek, so you can definitely speak about that.
Okay, you said the social life, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the social life at Lincoln was very... It was territorial as far as, like, cities. Mm-hmm. Like you more so, like, you had to be with your city at first. It was like you looked at people from other cities as the ops at That's first, true. You know? But it always takes certain individuals to break that barrier, like, oh, okay, it's okay you're not where I'm from. We still, you know, are alike. It's not the end of the world. But yeah, Lincoln was a real, like, you know, it was a small campus, so it was real family-based. Mm-hmm. Like, for the most part, people gonna look out for you. Other than, like, you know, just the random hating, just, I don't know what you hating for, like, you know, people just be hating. I ain't gonna lie, that's the HBCU thing. Like, that's in the black neighborhoods in general. Like, if somebody see, if you look like you doing better than somebody else, they look at you a certain way. And it's like, yo, it's just clothes. Mm-hmm. It's just a facade. Like, you don't necessarily know my background. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when you connect with people on a deeper level, they see you for more than just the exterior.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that going to HBCU, you just dealt with, sorry to use this term, but more black shit?
Going to HBCU definitely helped me embrace black people that I wasn't normally around. Because, like, I'm from Brownsville. So I was really only raised around one type of black person. Mm-hmm. But the thing about HBCUs, you're coming into contact with black people of all upbringings.
Yeah.
You got wealthy black people. You got black people that's coming from two-parent households.
Mm-hmm.
So it helped me really understand, like, oh, it's not only... I'm not the only type of black person.
Yeah. That's a good point.
You feel me? So it helped me, like, really learn how to deal with different people of my race. Because at one point, I only saw black people one way.
Absolutely.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
And I think that actually speaks to your original question about, like, diversity.
It does.
Because especially, like, being in the School of Business, like, it fostered this community in us and this appreciation for us that no matter where we go, whether or not we're going to business, whether or not we're on television or we're in different industries, when I see you, it's a, yeah, I see you, mm-hmm. right? Because we're not so different. No matter if you were doing, like, you know, I know one thing that we definitely bonded on in terms of our differences was, like, around just dancing. Because when we first were in school, that's when, like, the Know Your Clap was big and just, like, doing all these different dances was big. And so coming from Brooklyn and just coming to these spaces, and even me, when I was seeing all these, like, Jamaican dances and all this stuff, like, I'm just looking at so many different people's heritages and just embracing it and seeing that even though we're so different, we have a shared black experience here in America.
Mm-hmm.
And so just going into business, going into just, like, any type of space,
it made me have so much more of an appreciation for who my people are because of the beautiful differences that we have. And I think I got tired of like that white experience. Like for especially me, I talked to you guys about my past. And for high school, I got tired of being the only one or being the person that when they read Huckleberry Finn, they look at me as like, yeah, you understand why can you say the N-word? Like, because we don't want to read that word. Like, it was more so like this weight constantly on us. And it's just like, I'm in a space where I don't have to think about that. Like, I don't have to have that pressure of
is it stressful?
Yes. I just have like, and my thing is like, when we get to this outside world, we have enough time to be around white people. That's my thing. That's the inverse of what you're saying. I have enough time to be around white people. What I don't have enough time is to be able to like know that when I see that black person that's in my office, when we're the only two that happen to make it in our industry, like we're together. It's not a crabs in a barrel situation. But the A building, and that's something we'll talk about later, definitely taught me how to navigate and move in these spaces. In these spaces.
I could say that the one thing is that how coming from the city environment, right, and going into Marist and coming from and going into a rural area, right? I didn't grow up, you know, in the suburbs of, you know, the city or the Upper East Side, you know. That wasn't me. So going into that kind of environment, it was like a culture shock. And then especially being the black kid on campus and often the one black kid in class. I know you spoke about it as far as in like a competition, you know, sometimes on HBCUs. It's still there on predominantly white institutions too. Because at Marist, it's like how if you were another black kid in the class, it was almost like a, all right, well, we're going to battle to see who's smarter. You know, I'm going to answer this question. No, oh, he better call on me, you know, or no, I don't want to be in that group. Like, we'll be in two separate groups, you know, instead of working with each other. So it did feel like that competition. As far as in the social life, I could attest, you know, Gigi, is you be in the same environment, right, and you jamming, right? You partying, you dancing, but then when it comes down to even basic dance moves, it's like y'all doing it differently. You know what I'm saying? Somebody's hitting it with a little swag, somebody's hitting it real stiff, and you know? And it's like one of those things where you sit there and you acknowledge the difference between the two. You come to realize like, hey, this person is not like me, I'm not like them, but if we work together to get to understand each other, you know, it could be something great and it could be something good. And despite the experiences I had at Marist, because I had some racial experiences, trust me.
We're gonna get into that.
You know what I'm saying? I have been called the N-word outside of a window. Ooh. I've had juice thrown at me outside of a car.
Why are you
from a group of white people? You remember that?
My fault, because I was there.
Yes, you. And I was running down Route 9. I was a track star that time. Like, you know, but all in all, I will say is that how that social experience was able, taught me to adapt in different environments. Mm-hmm. And adapting in different environments, I mean that I could play a role in each environment. Mm-hmm. HBCUs, I would have loved to go to HBCU because I would have got exposed more to my culture, mm-hmm. which is something that I cannot take away because that's what they teach, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also one of those things where I think that me being at Marist, the social skills that I kind of learn is you kind of learn to be in different settings. And in different settings, it's because you're around different sets of individuals that you start to look at other things outside of just the norm of what you would see as different.
White people. Basically.
You know, exactly. You know, you start like
different people. Yeah. Everybody means different white people. Because I would say at Marist, probably my production classes, I would have another black kid with me, but then there was this one kid who I thought was like, I walked into class the first day, I'm like, oh, another black kid, hype, yes. Then the minute he started talking to me, hi, what's your name? I'm like, oh, you're not that black person. You're not for me. Like, it was a lot of people in Marist who were cooning, and sometimes in my production classes, I would be the butt of the joke where they would use me to say, well, I'm not like her. And I think that leads into my next question. What is some of the diversity that you guys think you dealt with that is, you know, unique to your institution? You know, what is something that's unique to HBCUs? And then there's unique to PWIs. I know for us, dealing with the institutional racism, dealing with the fact that you have white people who were just so comfortable to say certain things to you, and you can't really express it, you can't get upset, because then you'll be feeding into a stereotype. So a lot of times, I don't know for you guys, for me, it was like a culture shock because I literally had to tone down. And I, you guys know, I'm like, I'm very big. Yeah. And it was like sometimes stressful for me that I can't really curse the people out the way I want to, because at the end of the day, it's like, oh, that's how black girls act. And I just didn't know how to tell someone, don't talk to me this way, because I'm just used to yelling at people.
I think some of the diversity that we dealt with, like at HBCU, or me specifically, what I witnessed, I would say, starting with the females, the typical, I mean, the whole light skin, dark skin thing, that's just like, just, I feel like it's just something that needs to be just watered down. But unfortunately, it's something that we're still dealing with to this day and age. But unfortunately, that is some things that I dealt with, just some of the females I encountered with, just friends, relationships, what have you, in terms of, not light enough, you going to a certain sorority, you dark enough, you going to that sorority. It's just childish stuff. And then even with the guys, it's from dialect itself in terms of just slang and what have you. That's just the diversity amongst itself. Oh, you speaking to somebody in a certain way, like you need to watch your tone, like things of that nature. I wouldn't necessarily, it was a lot of diversity in of negative diversity, I would say, I've dealt with, but just in general, just that's the main two that came to my mind, though.
I know one diversity for me is definitely almost us to speak about is financial aid. I personally, you guys, HBCU people can agree or disagree. I don't think HBCUs do enough to keep their students in school. I personally don't think so. I only had Clark Atlanta as an example, but I personally don't. I think with most HBCUs, they make everything a process. I understand as black people, you know, thinking of how HBCUs came about, you know, it was a time where we weren't supposed to go to college, so these institutions were safe spaces for black people to learn about a culture, to be educated, to be happy amongst each other. But everything is a fucking process. I just want to join the communications club. It's a process. They make everything harder than it needs to be, especially financial aid.
You on the line for what, an hour, 2 hours max?
Yeah, I don't know, freshman year? Burst off forever.
Yeah, so I guess I'll expand on this one since I didn't speak on the last one. I actually did do domestic exchange 1 year, one semester at Columbia University, so I can speak on both. There is a process in most A buildings in HBCUs. I don't think that it's just one A building. If you don't know, is the administration building. That's where all of the financial aid is held. That's where everything is. And it is a process. They're supposed to be open from 9 to 5. The office doesn't open at 9. They may get there at like 10:30. They go to lunch from 12 to 2. It closes at 3 o'clock. Like, you really have to be in and out. So you have to learn how to navigate the system. You have to learn how to say, if someone tells you no, then they're not the right person. You need to go higher than them. You need to go to their manager. You have to become friends with someone who can tell you yes. And what I think that all of the HBCUs are trying to teach us in those A buildings, while it is still very terrible, like, I mean, we do need to do better in terms of getting financial aid, although we don't have as much support as a lot of PWIs. I think what they're trying to teach us is that in this world, we're going to have it tough. We're going to have to we're going to get the no's more than everybody else. I know I've been in offices where, like, black people are told no all the time, and we've learned how to maneuver around that. So what they're trying to teach us is how to maneuver in a world that's going to keep telling us no. And so that's what I've taken out of that. I do admit that a lot of it is very wrong. Like, we do need to do better. We have to find ways to, like, give back or support or do as much as we can to get people to come home, as, you know, HBCUs like to say. But that's what I took from that. I will say that adversity from Columbia University and being at a PWI was completely different. I was the darkest person in every class I was in. I was in a Greek mythology class, and I was the only black girl. And I would see this same teacher, like the same professor, at a gym class later on. Like, we'd pass each other all the time, and she wouldn't even look me in the face. I've literally waved at her, I've said hello, and she would pretend as if I didn't exist. Like, honestly, it was the weirdest feeling in the world. I looked around in another class that I was in, and I was literally the only person that was like it was just a lot. And for me, like, I didn't like that level of, like, having to feel like I'm representing my race all the time or all of that in a classroom. I'm there to learn. I don't really need to deal with the fact that I'm black, you're white, all of this stuff, or like a white professor that just walks by me as if I didn't try to say hello or I wasn't trying to communicate with you outside of the classroom. I'm not used to those experiences. I've had tons of white professors and teachers along the way from the time I was in kindergarten on. So that was like completely out of the norm for me, and I didn't really appreciate it that much. I will say that because of all the adversity I was going on at Columbia University, when I did meet the black students, they were lit. They were great. Yeah. They were family. But that same family was the same family I got at Howard. Sans all of the racism and the negativity that I had to deal with every day. We deal with that enough outside. I don't need to, like, deal with that in school too. Like, everyone's like, oh yeah, I learned how to deal with a different environment. I learned how to, like, to maneuver or change or like be a chameleon. I would say that Howard University taught us how to be chameleons more than anybody, especially in the School of Business. Like, they're like, okay, you want to be in a school to be? They have golf lessons for people because in certain cases, you're going to have to play golf. They had etiquette classes for people because you know what? You're going to be at certain dinners and you need to know which forks and knives to pick up. They had swimming lessons in the College of Arts and Sciences because Black students didn't necessarily know how to swim. Like, that wasn't a thing, right? So you're going to learn how to swim before you leave. So I will say that those things that they created were actually more of a way for us to maneuver in environments where we were not going to be around each other all the time. I actually learned how to be more of a diverse person at Howard University than I did at Columbia University. I actually learned more that I needed to like calm down, or like not calm down necessarily, but like be more aware of my Blackness all the time. And that's kind of annoying. I have to deal with that enough from my 9-to-5 all the time, or every job that I ever worked, even McDonald's. So like having to deal with that at college, I don't think is a necessary tool. I don't think it's necessary. I think a lot of times, like, I feel bad for hearing that you like had to get like stuff thrown at you or being called a nigger. You shouldn't have to deal with that in school. Like, you should have to deal with that in outside environments. But when you're in school, you should just be there to get your education, to be around people that are like-minded like you. They just want to get their education. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. It should, race shouldn't come into that.
And like, experience you diversity.
Yes, yeah. You should be able to just have fun, live your best life. College is a deferment plan, right? Like, at the end of the day, we all know that's what it is, right? So you should be able to have fun in that deferment plan. You shouldn't have to deal with like people getting like nooses all over the place or all that stuff. You should be able to come home, like, and you know, do the know your clap or whatever y'all was doing in 2012 2016. I'm sorry, I'm old. But you know, do something, Dougie. The Dougie, right. Whatever it may have been, do something. But that's not where it's at for me.
Yeah, I would have to say, I mean, so of course it is known that they say that the funding, when it comes down to HBCUs, the funding does lack, right? And there was a study that was, it was a study on Black students at HBCUs, right? And it was from 2016, where it talked about when President Trump signed the that bill in order to actually get more funding for the HBCUs, right? That was what they currently had as far as in the research. I don't know as far as in what more funding did they do or what it is, but do you guys know how many HBCUs there is? It's 105. So I never knew that there was actually that many HBCUs, right?
I'm shocked.
And
yeah, me too.
And so
I got a t-shirt.
I was like, how? I never knew that it was that many, right? And when you think about it, you're like, because it's that many, more of our people should actually go, right? But the sad reality of it is that how the world that we live in now, parents are looking at the financial stipulations that comes with it. Like you said, it's a deferment plan, right? But it also is a financial ticket if you take it that way.
Absolutely.
And if you think about it that way, some parents is like, hey, just like my mom, when I got into Virginia Union, they only gave me $7,000, right? But then I had to come up with $15,000 for the year, each year. Where am I getting that? My mother already told me, I want you to go to school, but I have no money and I can't even co-sign on a loan with you. So now it's up to you to figure out whatever programs you're going to get in, whatever scholarships you can get. So when you think about it, it's like also that has to be addressed too, because it's one thing to be like, yes, it's great to go to HBCU. And I wanted to be a Kappa. Zeta Psi, don't kill me. Zeta Psi, don't kill me. But, you know.
we about to talk about that,
you know,
next
I was like, Zeta Psi, don't kill me, because I love y'all too. Y'all know y'all my peoples. But all in all, when it came down to it, that financial ticket was really that stamp. Like, hey, either you going to be able, are you coming out $50,000 to $80,000 for a bachelor's degree? Knowing that they're gonna ask you for you to get another degree, more experience, or are you gonna be able to go to a school where you can get the same education, you can graduate, and then also you won't come out with that financial burden as much?
Well, can I just add an addendum that I think most PWIs offer so much money for their Black students because they have to meet a quota.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. A lot of HBCUs have predominantly Black students. Everyone has the same story. I want to be in college. I don't have the money, because when we think about the Black experience, you know, the years of institutional racism, finance, money is the issue with Black people. It is. So if you go to HBCU, everyone has the same story. So I think you know, as an excuse for HBCUs, they can't offer help to everyone. And just piggyback off what Hab said, you know, they have to, I guess they have to make it harder for people if you really want it. You know, was Clark Atlanta's motto, find a way or make one. Find a way or make one. So I can definitely see the difference in it. I know for me personally, I wasn't properly educated on college. I didn't know after every year it goes up. So I'm thinking that summer I'm good to go to Clark, and I had a balance of like 30,000 and change. And I was like,
plus it's private and you saying it's not enough financial.
Yeah, and I was like 30. So. I called them like, I have a scholarship. Oh yeah, it just covers like 10,000. Where am I going to get that money? And I think for me, the issue was they didn't offer enough help. It was just kind of like, well, yeah, girl, just figure it out. And that was for me like, okay, I'm young. I don't know what else to do. Whereas at Marist College, I'll go to the office like, I need help. I was doing little things like I stayed off campus. I commuted 2 hours. They gave me a grant. They made up grants at that point. They gave me a transfer grant because I transferred from another school. They gave me a grant because I was a production major. I'm like, I'm looking up some of this stuff. I'm like, that's not even a real grant. They just added names just to keep me there because I would always threaten them like, well, I'm going to just have to go to another institution. But I want to move on to Greek life because I have three people in here who are Greek. You two are Zeta Psi, and then Say here is a Kappa. And one thing I want to say, I know I used to tell you at Marist, like, I don't give a fuck about Marist Greek life because I'm like, I got approached by a sorority one time. One of my roommates was the president. She's like, you should join. I'm like, no offense, sis, but y'all history, y'all probably was hanging my ancestors. I don't know. Oh. No shade. I don't know. I don't want to be. I don't want to be. I do not. I do not want to be your token black member, but say this is you're diverse. We have our first black sorority sister, and I'm like, I'm sorry, our morals don't coincide, our history don't coincide, and certain things I can't talk about you with, like, and my roommate was cool, she was cool, but I was like, sis, I need to read your history book, and I already had a deal what I wanted to do as far as Greek. I'm not gonna say it, so I was like, no, I'm gonna stick into that. I'm good. I'm not gonna do that. But I know I used to tell you like. Are you sure? So I just want to speak about the differences of Greek life from a PWI and HBCU, if you guys want to take the floor. You first.
Well,
put it down.
I don't know I never went to a PWI, mm-hmm. So I don't know the Greek life at PWIs. Like, I only know it from like a visiting standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like the Greek life at HBCUs, it's sad. It's a popularity contest. Like, a lot of times, if at first, when you see certain people in certain, you know, spotlights, you look at them like, oh, I could see them being this, or I could see them being that. But a lot of times, you know, like, now that I'm on the other side, just like putting together, like, a well-oiled machine, just a great team, you can't have one type of person
mm-hmm.
for the whole line. Like, literally, like, my line, I have 12 line brothers. There's 13 of us. Two from probably each city, but literally, it's 13 different personalities. Like, like I said about the whole HBCU population in general. Like, people come from all different walks of life. So, HBCUs, like, Greeks is the forefront. You know, they use Greeks for everything. For pep rallies, for open house, a lot of times. But a lot of times, it's like, I feel like these Greeks at PWIs, like, I don't know, they get away with certain things that we can't get away with. And I don't know if it's like because of like just like anything black people do or is like linked to, is like frowned upon. Like,
specifically the Divine Nine.
Yeah, specifically the Divine Nine.
I was about to ask that.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's things that I've seen, like, you know, multicultural organizations get away with that we could have never got away with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about it's footage of it, certain things. So it's like, It just was like a wild to me sometimes when I see how, like, how much like Greeks were like used to promote HBCUs, but when times of like, you know, adversity, HBCUs would throw the Greeks under the bus.
Mm.
Like, quick. Like, just the, oh, we don't need that. But other times y'all using us to get these kids to come students. Here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. Is there a difference in pride? I've always felt like, and you guys can probably attest to this, not attest, but probably just argue this against me, but I've always felt like with fraternities and sororities at predominantly white institutions, I don't think they're founded on anything particular except networking and jobs. I don't think there's no type of like no real brotherhood, because I've from what I think they're all cool in college. After you graduate from college, these people don't even stay in contact. Whereas with the Divine Nine, you know, my sister's an AKA, and the people she was online with, they're in her wedding. They're, you know, at her baby shower, the godfather of her kids. You know, they're a big part of her life. Whereas at PWIs, I think it's just a lifestyle for college. It's like a social club. It's not really Greek. It's like a social club. And you guys can probably prove me wrong or tell me.
So your organization, too.
I'm not really a fan. I joined the frat life just because of the actual group of people. Like, we recharted the fraternity, the chapter on our campus and whatnot. And the people who did it, I fucked with them and whatnot, and then I end up getting into it, and then it got deeper than what I thought it was, and then I end up, you know, swinging inside some joint casino, we're gonna talk about that. And then, you know, and I start seeing all these people, we start traveling to schools and whatnot. I would say, I think in Marist in particular, it's not really popping or big or nothing like that, but as far as, like, after, there's definitely, we stay connected. Like, we got this Facebook group, and everybody writing it, like, I need a job in this, any field, and be 100 people that are comment, like, oh, you know, we a CEO of this, so we got people looking in here. So I think as far as a job and networking and definitely communicating after college and whatnot, that's definitely, you know, prevalent inside of, I guess, for my fraternity. I'm not sure about other fraternities and whatnot, but and they go out sometimes, too.
Mm-hmm. I would say, so not getting into too much of my history of the fraternity, but we date back to the Civil War, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going back that far and knowing the story, it was a connection, right, that was made. And that brotherhood was ended up being, you know, formed. So going off of that and knowing that, right, you know, so there is some type of, you know, foundation when it comes down to it, because there was two people on two opposing sides. And what I would say is that how, I mean, I, like I said it before multiple times, I wanted to be a Kappa. I'm just saying, heard that again. Just,
oh my God.
It's the third poem.
All right.
But, what,
that's a culture difference.
No, so.
Yes.
Right? So.
Facts.
So, right, what happened right, is that how, so, and don't get me wrong, guys, because I'm not talking anything bad about my fraternity. I have my fraternity shirt at home. I wear it pridefully. I wear my letters. And the connection between us is different, right? I'm not gonna say it. So HBCUs, you know, the fraternity, when I think about it, it's the party life. And like you said, it's the popularity, right? And when you think about it, and that's where I was like, how for you, I was like, for me, it's a, I think about it in the opposite, where I think that it's like, all right, that's the party life. That's what it's about. It's not about the connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes down to, and this is because I went to a predominantly white institution, and pledging Zeta Psi, I'm like, the connections that I've made with these brothers, yes, it took some time for us to adapt to each other, right? It took some time for us to make everything work, right? But we actually formed a brotherhood that was really, really beyond good, beyond decent, and the connection that we have afterwards is amazing. There's people across seas that we get in contact with that's like, hey, I'll pay for your flight. I'll pay for you to come out here. Just visit. We just want to see what you're about.
It is an international.
Yeah, I was like, you know, we just was like, we want to see what you guys are about. We want to get to know you guys. Like, come out here. It's really welcoming. And I feel that within the fraternity.
Are your founding fathers black?
No, they white.
No, they're white.
Zeta Psi,
are you guys like the only chapter that has like black members?
No. At one point, we definitely was the most diverse. We definitely had the most black Hispanic people in our chapter at one point, but I be seeing like ancient pictures, black and white, and they had black people in it.
Can you just quickly just give us a history on your fraternity so people the name, the founding year, all that information?
Zeta Psi, 1806. We the first to be established north and in the south during the Civil War era. We still communicated. We had a newspaper where we spoke to each other, and we was on opposing sides and whatnot, just kind of speaking and helping each other and whatnot. We the first to go international. We the first to be national. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Same organization.
We was on the same line.
Got it. The reviving line.
We the Richard and Fathers.
Well, I'm not Greek, but me and Trey are in the same dance organization, which is kind of like Greek because there are different chapters. Mm-hmm. And we are Chapter 10, the Hypnotic Chapter, House Arrest 2, Championship Dance Team Incorporated. We are actually line brothers, sisters. It's always weird because it's a co-ed organization. So I'm like, oh, this is my line brother. They be like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, this is my line brother. And we crossed in November of 2011. Mm-hmm. DMI, the major infiltration,
that
DMI
part.
Or die. And I would say it was probably my first experience with something that was supposed to be Greek life. I just wanted to dance. And this was like the poppin', this was the poppin' group on campus. They ran everything in student life. They danced in everything. And honestly, they had a connection with the Divine Nine on campus because we have Divine Nine members in our organization. So, you know, we have this thing called Dancing with the Dimes where we get people from Greek to dance with a member from the squad. And it's a, it, for me, it was great because I was a freshman, first semester in the Poppin' Ass Dance Club. And
I mean, to the point of the whole networking and what have you, what y'all was elaborating on. Of course, the same within you, like you said, it's 10, it's multiple chapters. It's what, 14 now, I want to say.
Yeah. I think so, yeah. I ain't been following.
They keep expanding, but I want to say it stopped at 14. But however, we came in like 11, so it's been, what, 8 years now. But however, more so with the friendship, the family, the networking, what have you, that's within any organization. That's not just with our organization or your organization. But I think what's most key about it regardless is the fact that that foundation, the friendship, and the unity that you all have.
Yeah, like,
can I say one
thing? Go ahead.
As far as Greek life, and this is just how I see it. Y'all can tell me if y'all see it differently. I feel like it's like a gang. Like, I'm in the street and I'm with my peoples, and the way we move, we was moving the same way.
We busting heads.
Oh,
we got the secret handshake. Like, some of the rules, like, even with, if you look at Bloods and Crips rules on the streets, then I read my chapter book. Like,
there's some people listening, like, you trying to say I'm a gang member?
It was some of the same stuff.
I don't think it's gang. I think it's just pride. Because if you,
whatever that brotherhood is, even gang members, when they join, yo, why you join to be Blood or Crip? Wanted the brotherhood. I'm on. Come on.
You got something to say?
Nah, it's funny he said, like, he made the gang reference. Because, like, to the outside world, like, most people from the hood, that's, like, they see it as something, like, just, you know, on a college base, on a college level, but they don't know how hard we go for this.
Right.
Like, they think it's a game. Like, when we see, like, if I catch somebody shimmying and you're not a Kappa.
Oh, it's a problem.
It's a problem. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. She thinks she's funny. Like, not necessarily, like, I know how to conduct myself now. Like when I first started, like, I came, like I said, my freshman year was 2011. I didn't, it's not that I didn't respect Greek, like, rituals, but I just wasn't aware of it. And a lot of times these Greeks, you know, they cross and they become people they're not.
They change.
So a lot of times, like, you know, like, one of the spoken rules is when they strolling, get out the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my freshman year. I'm dancing with a nice shorty. You feel me? Like
I ain't going nowhere.
I was really in. Like, I was waiting for her, like, whole party type. Q's coming through. You know the Q's. Mm. And I swear to God, I did not move.
Did you get kicked?
Nah, I didn't get kicked. Because, like, I was a freshman, but, like, they knew me. Like, people knew me. Like, you feel me? So it was like, I got 11 dudes with me. Like, I got 11 wild Brooklyn dudes with me. So that's where, like, the whole, like, my little beef with the Q's started. Like, don't get me wrong, they cool. Like,
y'all started so much beef with this damn show.
But nah, as far as, like, the whole prideful thing, yeah, as far as me, like, I was getting in a lot of trouble, like, and it came to a point where I wanted to change my image on campus. Like, really, like, I was known as, you know, oh, let's say he danced, you know, he fly, he from Brooklyn, blah, blah, but he's a troublemaker. Like, I was really, like, you know that
mixy?
You know that them troublemakers, but they still cool with faculty, so they, like, a lot of things I was supposed to, yeah, like, a lot of things I was supposed to get kicked out for, I didn't get kicked out for.
He's
because
not a bad kid.
I had the right connection, so it came to a point where it was like, I had to just weed out what I wanted to do. I didn't like the Q's because they did too much. The Alphas, they didn't really have nobody that I felt was popping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had good dudes. Like, they was trying to little bro me, but it's like, y'all can't. Y'all can't little bro me, not y'all. Like, y'all can't.
Yo, it's
like, they was cool.
It's like,
I'm not trying to be shady. I'm like,
I've been shady since we started this. I'm here for it, though.
But it's like, you know, then the campus came around. It wasn't even, it's crazy. When I got on campus, the campus wasn't even in. They was suspended. So there was like a resurrection line that was like 2013 or whatever. And my friends was on that. Actually, like, four of my friends was on that.
Yeah, I've seen your pictures. A lot of y'all on campus. I'm like, oh, so y'all.
So it was like, that's when I started doing my research, whatever. Then, you know, you start realizing, like, the real role that Kappas played, well, fraternities in general, Divine Nine, played in the advancement of black people in these universities. Like, as far as, like, Kappa Alpha Psi in particular, we was founded January 5th, 1911, on the campus of Indiana University.
That's your knowledge.
Hey, real quick. And, like, during those times, it was, like, really, like, it was almost like suicide going to schools in some of these cities, like Indiana in 1911.
Yeah, that's like, scary.
So they actually came together as like a safe haven, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when, and as far as my chapter in general, my chapter is Epsilon. One of like our first founder, he actually came to my campus like personally to charter the chapter. So certain things like that just made me like really like go hard for my chapter. Like, don't get me wrong, I go hard for Kappa. Mm-hmm. Like, that's another thing with this Greek stuff. Like,
it's the whole organization.
You rep your chapter first. You rep your chapter first, and then when you like come across other Greeks, you rep your org.
Every mm-hmm. blood, not your blood.
Oh, like, God. For real.
I love Kappa, but I can't mess with all Kappas. Like, some that's of these true. Dudes be like, I be like, yo, who let you in this? Like.
I feel like that's
really
awesome. Real talk.
Okay, so last thing I want to do really quickly, because I think we went out of time. Really quickly, I really just want to speak about dating, and I'm happy I have some females here dating at a HBCU and a PWI. For me personally, I don't think it has anything to do with either institution. I didn't have no luck at a HBCU or a PWI, but PWI made it really hard for me to wean out who was worthy of me, because there was a lot of cornballs at Marist. And majority of them, the ones I did like, didn't even date black girls. So it was kind of like, well, I had no choice but to focus on my studies. Like, it was a drought in college for me. I didn't have experiences. But anybody, two people quickly can speak on that, dating.
All I will say is ratio. The ratio of men, attractive, beautiful, sexy, handsome, well-dressed, well-groomed, amazing, stellar black men, to the litany of amazing, beautiful, gorgeous black women. Fine, eligible, smart, brilliant. We have like, I think around our time was maybe about one man to about 14 women.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, that's when like the down low epidemic was a thing where it was, so it was just like a lot.
I'm on the clock, girl, I know.
Yeah, so it was just like a lot. But it made it very, very, it created, I feel like, what is now this culture of like, oh, ghosting and dabbling in like several different women at one time, or kind of date. It like took away traditional courtship,
mm-hmm.
because I think like the eligibility and guys knowing that like they are, you know, a hot commodity or a limited commodity at that, it also kind of watered down the what they had to do in order to actually gain access to us. So it, instead of like a true like first date, it became like a date to wear habaka.
It was chilling on the yard.
Yeah.
It was chilling on the yard.
Yeah. That was a first date. And it's just like, okay, then you have more friendships and situationships. Like, I think that's what kind of bred that culture, especially, I will say, in the black community. I know it exists in other communities, but it definitely bred like this different level of like, well, you know, we're upper echelon men and there's like so little of us, so you guys gotta kind of take what you can get.
And they had too many options at that.
And
then
so many options. So
and
many
they're
wonderful
still
options.
Acting like that till this day.
Yeah,
yeah, they are. You know.
Yeah. But that's, they're not as fine as we, they haven't aged like we have though. That's
didn't
the difference.
Age like fine wine.
Like,
they didn't really.
Any men have anything to say to this?
As far as like the whole dating scene at the HBCU,
yeah, speak up, brother.
I'm gonna just say, like, it's definitely, it could be messy depending on what you like allow yourself to be around. You know, it depends. Like, for real, you have messy girls and then you have messy guys. So it's all about, you know, what is your preference? You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I felt me. I was. I was somebody that I thought I had a mind of my own. So a lot of times, you know, I'm coming from neighborhoods where, unfortunately, we weren't treating girls like queens. Like we weren't. It wasn't that we didn't see them like that, but their actions weren't showing queen behavior.
I mean, you're from Brownsville, so I mean, I get it.
I'm Brownsville. I went to Boys and Girls. Like, I didn't see. You feel me? So it was just like, as far as like, because I had a girlfriend. My girl, she was she was from D.C. Howard, blah blah, blah. But she was from D.C. But the way I even got with her was like, you got to show me you not what I'm used to. So it was like, now that I look back on it, it's an unfair. It is like it's
you see the ladies all looking at him.
I'm being honest. Like I'm being honest. Like a lot of guys go through this. Yeah. Like, not a girls. Y'all don't see it from a different
podcast. Yeah, this is about to be a whole nother episode.
I know y'all don't see it from this perspective, but just how you said the ratio of, you know, well groomed, polished guys to what, like there being more, the higher number of girls, the number of well polished girls to dots is nowhere close. So we're not coming.
I mean, that's a good perspective.
Maybe you're speaking to your era, whereas we're speaking to our era. So yeah. we're like.
I mean, I have an older brother, so he's your era.
But
yeah,
then the institution, though, also. Yeah. So Howard is a different type of institution than a lot of other HBCUs. No shade.
So
but there's a lot of extra.
Wait, what's the Howard population? Because I know Howard girls. Like, what are we talking about right now?
We clip.
Damo, really quickly, because we all run out of time. Can you speak on dating for PWIs really quick?
Oh, and yeah. Then I'm real quick, it's definitely difficult as a black man, just because the white girls, you know, it's racist out there.
Was it really?
And so, like, you could be fly, you could be smelling good, you got all the moves and all that. She gonna go out with some white boy, got the chewed up Nikes, a button down with some Levi jeans. Like, the white girls, yeah, they go for anything. Then it's real cliquish at Marist too. So the sports teams only hang with each other. Mm-hmm. Then all the girls only like the football players and some of the basketball players. So they was really getting the cream of the crop. You know what I'm saying? So everything else, like the regular dudes like us, we had to just, you know what I mean? Okay. They were regular chicks.
Okay, yeah. So I'm gonna wrap up. Oh. But let me just say this to you, Damo. First of all, the black dudes at Marist was either checking for the white girls or they was checking for the Spanish girls. So I was like the bottom of the totem pole. But let me be at a party. Now you wanna dance with me because I have rhythm.
I was in Poughkeepsie local.
I was in love at Marist.
Okay, but let me just wrap up because we are out of time. I wanna thank you guys for coming on. I think the overall goal of this podcast for people to get is definitely go to college. I think everyone here can attest to the fact that college doesn't make you smarter, but it does help you grow professionally, mentally, physically. You know, you become a whole new person once you get a degree. Not necessarily smarter, but it does do something for your growth as an adult. So if you're listening to this, anyone who has high school kids listening, you know, whether you go to a PWI, HBCU, it doesn't matter. Just make the most of your experience. Mm-hmm. And grow. Get out of your hometown. Get out of the hood.
Study abroad.
I didn't study abroad, but I really wish I did.
Be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Experience different cultures. Absolutely. Definitely. Like, that's the goal.
Say what you mean.
So again, I want to thank you guys for coming on. Everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. Make sure you join the conversation on Instagram, c.connectionmedia, and it's a wrap.